December 9th, 2018. Let's continue here in Derech Hashem and into Perek Gimal and Ot Aleph through Bet. So if you really, Ot Aleph will be somewhat of a summary. He'll add a few more details of what we kind of left off at the end of Perek Bet. It says, Kevar Zacharnu, we already mentioned, Heyot HaAdam Otah HaBriyah HaNivret Lidabek Bo Yitbarach. So if you recall, this was the statement that our purpose is Lidabek, that Debekut HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'hi HaMutelet Ben HaShlemut VaHisronot. And we are, to a certain extent, placed in between these, on the spectrum of shlemut, this completion or completeness, and chisronot, deficiencies, v'hayecholet b'yado liknot ha-shlemut, and we are given that capability to acquire shlemut. V'ulam, sarich shiyeze b'b'chirat o'v'rsono, as Ramchal already told us, he says, if you want to truly be shalem, you have to achieve it on your own. If you're inborn shlemut, it's not real shlemut. Shlemut, by definition, means I became complete in contradistinction to deficiency. If you were in some way coerced into quote shlemut, that's not shlemut. Lo haya nikret ve'emet ba'al shlemut. This, of course, are concepts we dealt with in the past. Ki enenu be'alav, kevan shuchrach me'acher liknotok, because you're not the true owner of this matter. You're not the true achiever. You were forced into ve'hamaknehu ba'al shlemuto, and the person who forced you into it, the person who gave you it, he has the shlemut. He just bestowed it upon you, but you're not truly shalem. V'lo hayta kavana ha'ilyona mitkayemet, as a result, the kavana ha'ilyona, the divine will, as it were, would not be fulfilled. Alken, therefore, it was necessary for us to be choosers, to have that bechira. For us to have the equal capability and tendency to each one of these ends and goals. He uses two words, both da'at and hefetz, which are important, not for our discussion today, in terms of your will and your wanting to go acquire either shlemut or chisaron. Of course, da'at, Jack Scab will get very excited about, right? Da'at is always the bridger, in Joe as well, right? Da'at in Kabbalah is the merging, is the completion of the relationship, in Robert's words. In other words, da'at oftentimes is what comes in between. You have chokhmah and you have binah, and what to a certain extent brings them together is that da'at, and what our ability to perceive and to hone in on reality is da'at. In fact, that's the sexual relations in the Torah are yidi'ah, because that's us coming together and creating something new. V'hayicholet gam ken biyado liknot, and we'll deal with that, by the way, later.
Very simple understanding, you're saying da'at, understanding hefes is...
So what's the difference between the two? I'm not dealing with it. What's the difference between the two? The same thing? Synonymous, and he's just being flower? And what's da'at?
There's a simple thing. It's just thoughts.
Right. Okay. So one has to do with thoughts. One has to do with emotions. It's possible. There's a long discussion about this matter. Malbim discusses this matter.
The mind and
and emotions. Okay. I'm better.
Not
keep in mind.
Desire.
Desire, whatever. Okay, but you can have an intellectual desire as well. Therefore, nivra ha'adam v'yeser ha'tov v'yeser hara v'habechira b'yado lehatot atzmo l'tzad shehu roseh. We are created with a yeser ha'tov and yeser hara. By the way, pay attention to the names of these things, right? They're yeser. What's the lashon of yeser?
Inclination.
Yeah, but why? I mean, yesira is a creation to a certain extent. These are our capability to create, right? Ve'ulam, probably. Le'ulam, lihiyot ha'davar hazeh nishlam karaui. However, and here's, you know, he's concluding really what he's told us. In order to have full shlemut on this matter, gazra ha'chokmah ha'elyona, she'yeh ha'adam murkav mishenei hafachim. We needed, therefore, to be built and to be created as dialectic beings. We needed to have, what's that? We have opposites. We are born. We have inborn opposite tendencies. Dehainu mineshama sichlit vezaka veguf arsiyi veachur. And says, on the one hand, we have what's called the neshama. He won't fully describe it over here. He does describe it as sichlit. Sichlit has something to do with our intellect. Zaka means clear, so it's pristine. And guf, which of course is the material side of matters, is arsi, melashon aretz, that's a materialism, gashmi side. Ve'achur means blurred or dirty, not easy to see through. Achartemoti, right? You clouded me in some way. You I don't know. You dirtied me. How do they? Muddied me. Wonderful.
Unenlightened physical body.
Unenlightened. Okay. Regardless, what's the difference between these two? Now, he's not saying, and Ramchal never would say such a thing, that on the one hand, Haramban might say something closer to this, but for Ramchal, there's a real singular vision of the world, and there is Maleaha Aris De'at Alamai Kamayim Layam Mechasim. It's the ability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be in everything and a part of everything. So he will negate something called dualism, and he'll see everything as only one. As a result, the guf utarsi, it doesn't negate sanctity of any sort. It's just harder to find that sanctity within it, and that'll be a very important point that he'll drive home over here. She called ehad mehem yate beteva lesido. We are on the one hand leaned towards neshama sichlit. On the other hand, we lean toward guf arsi. We have this tug of war within ourselves, or as part of dehainu haguf the hamriyut haneshama lesichliyut v'timase benehem milchama. There's some sort of inner war that we undergo.
Go ahead. So when he terms it as yeter hara, he's not necessarily saying that it is bad, because he's saying that it is essential.
It's necessary.
Correct. Something that others would not. I mean, in other words, medieval philosophy would certainly not say such a thing. Medieval philosophy was very much of the approach that there's dualism. We have our body and we have our...
Why did he choose the word ra?
It's the lashon of the hachamim, and he will deal with it later on when he talks about etz hada'at tov ra. He'll help us further with that respect. And keep in mind over there we're dealing with da'at and tov and ra and so forth. But yeah, I mean, he'll have to... It appears as ra. You'll have to do something along those...
Find ra as the absence of good as opposed to being evil. Is it different?
Okay, I can accept, but keep in mind, for him, ultimately speaking, it's a facade of ra. I mean, he's told us that already. We have facades of ra, whereas in reality, there's... Mm-hmm. He has a very monistic type of way of perceiving the world. Everything has within it
tov. It's an uncovering of the good.
There it is. And as a result, it's achur. Be'ofen she'im tikvah. Go ahead.
I'm doing exactly the opposite of what you're suggesting. Because when it says sikhli, that's perfection. And the guf is the opposite, which means you can never achieve anything on the ramp of perfection. Not that you can achieve perfection with the goof too.
Right.
I
knew you would go that way, and that's why I was preempting all this. And that's very much my Moreh Nevuchim type of philosophy.
Listen
to what I bolded, and tell me if you still think it. Be'ofen she'im tigbar haneshama tit'ale hi, or tit'ala hi maybe, v'ta'ale haguf imat.
Playing with words now. Because it's very simple. If you have a goof, you're satisfied in any form of fashion, you can't achieve perfection. Perfection would be you don't satisfy the goof at all.
You can't achieve perfection without the goof.
No.
You can't do anything without the goof.
But that's not his words. His word, the neshama can achieve perfection. Goof can never be even on the ramp.
He didn't say that.
It's not even on the scale.
He said the neshama achieves perfection.
He's hit for him sikhli. I know you are not going to agree with this, Ezra. I'm well aware, but I'm telling you, this is not what he's saying. Okay, give him a chance. Give him a chance.
He had those conflicts when he said, bida'at of hafiz. If you do bida'at, this and this, you understand.
But I'm not. I
didn't. You have a desire.
Okay.
I
don't want to go into da'an and haifis. I want to go into what his statement is over here. And he's telling you, if tigbar ha-neshama tit'alahi v'ta'aleh ha-gufi imah, Harambam would not have words like those. Harambam would have, if you have the sechil, so as a result, you negate the guf. It's not a statement. His statement is you have neshama, which in turn elevates or transforms, not in a physical sense, obviously, the guf as well, yeah.
The whole purpose of Tihiyat and Mitin, why is the goof going to come back for? If you achieve perfection and it's going to go on after you die, what's the purpose of Tihiyat and Mitin? There's no purpose if that's the goal of Sikhlit. So the goof has to be perfected with the Sikhlit after.
Okay, I mean, listen, I hear you. I don't need to go so far. You're giving manifestations. I'm just telling, that's what he's saying.
Isn't that the whole purpose of tahiyyat?
Potentially, but you could argue against it. You could argue against it. You could say that
in terms of... Goof would come back for what purpose? It's a klipa that you throw away.
Okay, in order to continue the challenges of this world. Okay, I mean, it depends how we envision this. V'yeh oto ha'adam ha'mishtalem b'shlemut ha'me'utad m'lashon atid v'im yaniach ha'adam sh'yinatzeach bo ha'chomer. Listen to his words over here. It says, if you allow for the chomer to be menatzeach, what did he say so far? He said over here, im tigbar ha'nishama, which means the strength of your neshama, right? That's the spiritual, whatever realm. And as a result, ta'ale haguf imma. The flip side is, im yaniach ha'adam shinatzeach bo ha'chomer. You allow for the material side to overcome you. In other words, the statement is not that you up the ante of your physical side. It's to a certain extent, his statement is, if you just stay status quo in this world, what happens as a result? You living in a material world become overcome by materialism, and therefore, hine yishpal haguf v'tishpal nishmato immo, right? Which would be untouchable for someone like Harambam. For Ramchal, you lost your capability, your connection to that spiritual realm. Again, by just being static, by just allowing. That's the. In other words, this isn't a clear symmetry over here.
That's what defines most of us.
Well, I certainly hope not. You're not giving us much credit here. Right? In other words, but just listen to the asymmetry over here. There's no symmetry at all. On the one hand, there is, if you endeavor upon a sikhli nishmati type of approach, you'll be able to elevate your gashmi, your artsi. He says, on the other hand, if you just are maniach, if you allow, so then what happens? You're overcome in terms of your neshama as well by gashmiut, right? So the concept over here is a constant motion and movement is absolutely v'yeh oto ha'adam bilti agun neshlemut v'niddeha mimena chas v'shalom ula adam hazeh yecholet lehashpil chomro lefi sichlo v'nishmato v'lekno shlemut k'mo shekatavnu. Okay, so that's Ramchal's statement. I really want to focus mostly on those words that I bolded. Again, on the sides, on that matter of, if you just twofold. First and foremost, in terms of my understanding of him and how to a certain extent it's a motif of his, and that is that he will see everything as one. And in turn, if you're able to accentuate or to bring forth that neshama side of matters, you then affect your guf side of matters, and everything works in tandem, and you have that ahdu to a certain extent. On the flip side, if there's that static state of being, that stagnancy, so you lose it also. In order to get into these types of matters, first and foremost, David Salama yesterday cited to me this passage from Rabbi Soloveitchik in his book Abraham's Journey, which is a book on Avraham Avinu. So it says over here, a central motif in Judaism emerged with the life story of Avraham. God does not redeem the world or the covenantal community all by himself. He uses man to perform the great messianic miracle of liberation. God works with instruments. Of course, the whole universe is an instrument in the hands of God, who created the world in order to realize his inscrutable will through his creatures. So everything's a part of the instruments of God in terms of his operation here. However, the most effective tool is man, with his paradoxical characteristics and dialectical nature. There's the statement which we know already from last week, from Nefesh HaHayim, from Ramchal, from who's it to be Meir ibn Gabay, from Leshem. All the Kabbalists are all over this type of concept, that man is the center of everything because of man's capability to bring about ahdut, to bring about that, close the gap between worlds, between concepts, between realms. And how does man affect that? As we discussed in past weeks as well, with his bechira, with his capability to do so. So here's Rabbi Soloveitchik stating that in fine language over here. He says, man was chosen, or man was created by God because of his paradoxical characteristics, because of his dialectics, because we have, let's call it guf and neshama, let's call it the fact that we're driven in different directions, and therefore capable and mandated to bring them together. God appoints man as his plenipotentiary. I don't know, whatever. His agent, his shaliach. That's obviously what it means. Well, I don't know that. But while non-intelligent matter functions mechanically, man acts willfully, intelligently, and freely. Dead, non-intelligent. By the way, these types of words, I was told that there was, 15, 20 years ago, his son-in-law, Rabbi Lichtenstein, and his daughter-in-law, they used to come in for there was what used to be called the Orthodox Forum. The Orthodox Forum was, they would gather all sorts of scholars and rabbis from the Orthodox community in America, generally speaking. They would bring rabbis and scholars from Israel as well, and they would meet and they would discuss a topic every year. And there are lots of books that were composed, I have them, nice, important essays and things like that. So one time someone would present, and then they would critique or discuss and whatever. I never went to one, but this is my understanding exactly what used to go on at these. And so at one of them, so Tova Lichtenstein spoke up. I don't know, she said some word like plenipotentiary or something like that. And so someone turned to her, who was her contemporary, who said, "Why do you talk like that?" And she said, "What? Like what?" which is fascinating. They just didn't live in this world and or don't live in this world in a regular sense. I mean, she couldn't understand. She's, "Why you want to speak like the dregs?" Anyway, dead, non-intelligent matter cannot choose between obedience and rebellion, whereas man can. Of course, what we discussed in past weeks is it's not only dead and non-intelligent matter, it's also, as the Mekubalim were very much stressing, Malachim as well. Since man can refuse to collaborate with the Almighty, his cooperation is the more welcome. So in other words, that's very much what we're working with. And in order to just develop this a little bit further and bring it two steps forward this week, so I want to just return to one other source. It's a source that we read last week, but we didn't read it in its entirety. It was at the end of the class. I didn't get to stress this type of matter, and that was Nefesh HaChayim, right? Nefesh HaChayim in Shara Aleph, Perek Yod, was talking about these sorts of matters. I remember he was talking, the part we stressed was the Sulam of Yaakov Abino, which for Nefesh HaChayim was this bridging of worlds, and is the bridging of worlds. It's the nefesh, ruach, and neshama that we have, and that capability to bridge worlds in our life, which is our function, which is our mandate. It says, "Omnam b'davar echad." This is when he was comparing angels and human beings. Yitaron gadol la'adam mehamalachim v'hu ha'ala'at v'itkasherut ha'olamot v'hakohot v'ha'orot echad b'chavero asher ze'en b'koach kelah l'shum malach. Right. So that was what we were discussing. We discussed the sfirot, and we were discussing all these sorts of concepts where man has that capability of bringing about what the Kabbalists are all over, are obsessed with. And that is that Achtut, L'shem Yachut Kutsha B'richu Shechinteh, V'hu Me'ata'am Anal, Ki HaMalach Hu Be'etzem Koach Ahad Prati Levad, She'en Bo Klilut Kol Ha'olamot Yachad. Right, so a malach, on the one hand, has one function. Man is a microcosm. Man is the beholder of so many worlds. Lachen, En B'koach V'yicholet HaMalach Kela L'Ha'alot U'L'Kasher L'Yachid Kol Ha'olam B'Ha'olam Hanatuy Al Rashihem, Kevan She'eno Kalul U'Meshutaf Mehem. Angel, to a certain extent, is not connected to any world, not involved with any world, doesn't embody worlds. Vigam aliyat, right? And that was how Nefesh HaChayim, if you recall, described what Tzelem Elohim is, and so forth. And then he quoted these pesukim at the end, the pasuk that says, Serafim omdim. And Venatati, this past week's Haftarah, Venatati lecha mahalchim ben omedim ha'ele. And we talked about the fact that the angels are known as omdim, whereas man is mahalchim. There's the holech, is the capability to be in constant movement in order to bring about that ahdut, that oneness. V'rak ha'adam levad hu ha'ma'ale v'ham'kasher miyached ta'olamot v'ha'orot v'koch ma'aseh, and so forth. So that was, again, much of this is just a rephrasing and restructuring what we discussed in past weeks, trying to solidify just a bit. I want to make it a little bit more, a little bit. I want to bring it forward just a little bit. That's the point of the class today, is to bring it forth a little bit in terms of conceptualizing and understanding it a bit better, and then to smash it. Well, not really to smash it, but to smash with, you know, the direction you thought we were going in. It's a conversation I think Jack and I have had more than once, which is, it's a surprising conversation. It's a surprising reality, but, we'll comment on it when we get there. So one more, two more in terms of this, just in terms of stressing this type of concept, and that is that man's mandate is to bring together this unity. Again, there's the Gashmi within ourselves. We have the Gashmi and we have the Neshama, and our mandate is to be able to not suppress our Gashmi, but to be able to transform it, to look at it and say, go ahead.
So there seems to be a lot of emphasis on the individual characteristics of man and the sort of dialectical nature of an individual. But the
yes.
Other power of man is its ability to form large, broad communities, societies, and so on and so forth. Do any of the Kabbalists sort of say that it's that ability to to work, sort of to collaborate and work together and to take advantage of different talent, skills, so on and so forth, that also makes man unique?
In terms of doing it with other human beings, you're saying, societally? It's a good question. I don't know.
Like a Klal Yisrael.
I understand. I understand. The answer is they have to. I'm trying to. Yeah, but he's trying. He wants to know when they, in this context, when they talk about the greatness of man, do they talk about his social capabilities of working socially and functionally as a social animal?
Because like scientifically, man is unique in its ability to create large societies that, you know, let's say primates, right, as our closest example, can only create a tribe or a group of, I think they say it's less than 100 is the maximum.
If they don't, they should, is his point. In other words, that is a pretty big...
Is that
this,
how we advance? Is that how we get to this?
Yeah. Because of this civilization? And that's unique to us. What's this comment? I don't know. Okay, you tasked me to find it. It's got to be. It's got to be because it's... anyway, so but in this context, so Gaon Mivilna, for example, he's commenting on this pasuk in Mishle. Ora hayim lema'ala lemaskil lema'an sur mishe'ol mata. So here's his statement. He says, well, he starts off by saying, man is known as a holech. And he says, the concept of us being a holech is not only our capability to merge, but it's also when you're static, if your job is to be moving and you stop... Well, let's bring it back to what Ramchal told us earlier, right? The second you have that static, stagnant state of being, the homeo takes you over. And that's his statement. He says the pasuk is, Ora hayim lema'ala lemaskil, and so you're moving upward if you're maskil, lema'an, so that you're sur misheol mata, so that you avoid the fall into sheol, into nothingness, into that void. But again, I mean, this is to a certain extent just pieces together all these things that we've been mentioning. What's that? I say it all the time. I just said it on the chuppah last week, of course. I mean, it's what the avot were all about, right? The avot are constant movement and motion. Avraham starts his life with Lech Lecha, he ends his life with Lech Lecha. Yaakov, in the eyes of the Chachamim, Vayeshev Yaakov, Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, Be'eretz Kenan, immediately thereafter is the bad things that happen, the tragedies of Yosef. And my statement on that always is, look at Divrei Chachamim, it's quoted in Rashi, he says, Bikesh Lashevet Benahat, Kafat Alav Ruchzo Shel Yosef. What does that mean? You know, let I have a calm, peaceful... But the point is, Vayeshev, in the context of the Avot, is a negative passivity. You're not allowed to be passive. You have to be in constant movement. Someone did show me, Mars Sakal showed me this past two Shabbats ago. He says, but it does say twice by Avraham that Avraham was Yoshev. Yeah, okay, that's about but Vayeshev. No. So one is after the Akedah. One's after the Akedah. That's not a problem to me. That's the end of his life. That's very appropriate. I understand. But I was saying, but in Yaakov, I said that word is... Of course, that's what I answered him. But you have it also, Avraham Yashav, when he splits from Lot, it's a description of where he's Yoshev. Okay, anyway, but that is so much the statement. The statement is you're in constant movement, you're constantly looking to create these relationships, and in turn, the second that you become stagnant, it all falls, because reality sets in, and reality is one in which it seems... as if we're not surrounded by... Okay, anyway, Nefesh HaHayim has another book. He has a perush to Pirkei Avot. It's a perush there, and it's called Ruach HaHayim, and he has a similar statement. Hnei HaBechira Chofshit BaAdam Birsoto Mehapech Chomro HaMegusham Liyot Ruhani V'chen Nehepech Chas V'Shalom. He says we have that capability through our Bechira to transform what seems like Homer into Neshama or into Ruhaniyut, and of course the opposite. Pogem HaRuach V'Shava Kibsaron. When you can have that pigima in the ruach, and in turn it comes back to be like. And he quotes this pasuk. It's an interesting reading of the pasuk. I'm well aware it's a dirasha Ezra, but anyway, it says the pasuk says about Dora Mabul, lo yadun ruhi ba'adam b'shagam hu basar. So the statement is lo yadun ruhi. His reading is lo ye'od haruach b'toch haguf. My Ruach, the Ruach Elohim, the Selim Elohim, is no longer amongst them. Why not? Bishagam hu basar. It's a strange pasuk in the Torah, but his reading of it is Bishagam hu basar, because they have let themselves become overcome by that basar. So his reading of it and his homiletical reading of it goes like this. He says, listen, you want to know why we're a failure over here? Because they haven't been mehalich, because they become stagnant, because they have not. And in fact, I always point this out, right? It's after Dor HaMabul, right? After Dor HaMabul, we have the Migdal Bavil, which is again when we have stagnancy, when we want to stop. We don't want to be mefitza penechol haaretz. That, in short, is to piece this whole thing together and to kind of put it all into one sentence. Again, the statement is, man's mandate is shlemut. How do you bring about shlemut? That's in this endeavor towards achdut. How do you do that? Through constant movement in terms of trying to bring together. The second you're stagnant, it falls apart, and as a result, the Gashmi side overcomes. So how do we do this in somewhat practical ways in this world? So obviously, life is about this. I'll just give you one example. So this past week, we had the Levaya of Chacham Shaul Kassin, and that at Rabbi Kassin's funeral. So one thing that came up three times, and I thought it was appropriate to mention today, in order to just try to give some perspective on it, because I didn't think it was explained so well. They said that he was makpid always on leftover food. And he said, food has nitzosot shel kiddusha, and as a result, he was makpid that nobody should have leftover food. And if there was, he would make sure he always finished his food. Right, what does that mean? So again, if it's, I need to understand exactly what it means. But here's my understanding of it from an outsider's perspective. Here, take a look at Mishnah Berurah in Siman Vav Saif Katan Bet. He quotes from Magen Abraham. It says, Uba Kavanot. Kavanot is the works of, generally speaking, B'chaim Vital. Katuv de haneshama nehenet meharuchaniyut. מרוחניות המאכל והגוף נהנה מגשמיות המאכל ומכוח זה קשורים זה בזה על ידי המאכל. This is some sort of, again, here's our word, unity through food. But what does that mean, unity through food? He says, on the one hand, our physical side consumes the food and is nourished as a result of that. But our spiritual side as well has some sort of nourishment. Well, how do you have nourishment from a physical object? But again, it has to do with perspective. I don't know if you could use the word context, you could use the word perspective, you could use the word vision. This all has to do with vision, perspective, and context, and all that sort of business. In other words, the statement over here is, yeah, you could do the exact same action of eating, I don't know, the crackers, and to making sure there's not leftover because I'm a glutton, because I'm a hedonist. On the other hand, I can do it with a purposeful intent, being able to say that I'm doing this in order to bring about some sort of greater completion of myself. In fact, Mahazit HaShekel, his name, I was not fully, I don't know, Rabbi Shmuel HaLevi Kolin, I think he's a 17th century commentary, he comments on Magen Abraham. He says, Umikoh zek shurim ze bezeh. This is where the Mefarshim and Shulchan Aruch get as Kabbalistic as they will. Deem loken, ech yitkasher ruhani bagashmi. He says, through eating, which is probably the most material, not the most, but one of the most material physical endeavors we can have, he says, if you can't find a way to connect it over there, so how are you connecting? How are you bringing about this? Ech yitkayem ha-nefesh beguf al yedei achila gashmit, v'tetze mehaguf al yedei meniat ha-achila, ki ha-nefesh halo ena nehenet me-achila gashmit. He says, our nefesh, our neshama, whatever, our spiritual side, I mean, when it comes down to it, should we be ascetics? Should we be fasting? Torah certainly is not telling us to fast. So as a result, there has to be something within eating that with the proper perspective has that ability of transforming. Sefer Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to the people, and says, you think that you're eating just bread? You're really eating from the mouth of God or the words of God. What's the mention of words of God? Say the Kabbalah says the Arizal says, words of God is the food itself. But the food itself is transformative if you have the proper perspective on this. En lecha kol esev lemata, he quotes from the Midrash, she'en lo mazal milema'ala. What does that mean? Every blade of grass has some sort of mazal lema'ala. But that's a statement again in Divrei Chachamim in which they're looking to say to you, be able to have some sort of ahdut, some sort of combining between worlds, and say, within this world, I can see something beyond. That all being the case, with some sort of practical aspect, here's where we slam it all down. Here's where it all crashes. It all crashes in the following fashion. See, to summarize, we're setting forth our job in life. Our job in life is to be able to see the Gashmi and to be able to transform it and bring about some sort of Ahdut with Ruhani and so forth. And, you know, it's not as broad and out there as it sounds. It can be very, very much practical. But when it comes down to it then, so what's my main objective in life? My main objective in life probably is overcoming these obstacles, is being able to shift my perspective, being able to live a life in which I have a proper perspective on matters and so forth. If that's the case, could you imagine a reality or an ideal of man not having Bechira Chofshit? Ostensibly, that's ludicrous. Ostensibly, that's why would you want to get there? That's, our whole life is about having Bechira Chofshit. That's what we're here for. So listen to the words of Harambam, Perek Zayin Yisodeh Torah Halacha Vav. Kol Nevi'im En Mitnabi'im Bechol Et She'irsu. That's right, this is famous distinction between Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevu'ah, prophecy, and all everyone else. The other prophets, the general prophets, the 99.9%, can have prophecy whenever they... Moshe Rabbeinu Enoken. Moshe Rabbeinu Ela Kozman She'yachpot Ruach HaKodesh Lov Shato. Anytime he wills it, there is the nevuah, the prophet. So you might argue that his words over here of likening Moshe to Malachi HaSharet, some sort of flowery wording. And it might be, but he continues. Therefore, he has the capability to prophesy whenever he wants at will. It turns to Am Yisrael and says, listen, I'll ask. I'll be able to, at will, I'll be able to have that conversation. Harambam's reading of those pesukim somewhat homiletically as well. He reads this pesukim like this. It says, Moshe is told, tell everyone to go back to their tents, but you, Moshe, you are eternally standing here with me. Now, what's the tent in the eyes of the Torah? The entirety of prophecy or prophets, when they're done with their moments of prophecy, go back to your tent. What's your oil? That's life, as we know it. Go back to your material life, your home. That's why there's no such thing as a prophet who should be unmarried. Prophets are supposed to be married as well. Why so? Because we have different dimensions of our life. And we have this challenge in life of being able to take that dimension, the physical dimension, the Gashmi dimension, and raising it or transforming it. But Moshe, the statement is distinguished. Moshe, atapo amod imadi. You don't have that Gashmi side to you, Harambam seems to be describing. Moshe Rabbeinu lo hazar al ohalo harishon. Moshe never made his way back. Lefichach b'resh min ha'isha. Of course, the end of parasha behalot. Echad description. Le'olam u'min hadomelo. Harambam's description of Moshe Rabbeinu over here is very much the life of an ascetic. There was no sexual relations. It's almost as if he wasn't eating. Harambam doesn't say it, but he's likening him to a malach. And he's saying, you know, he had this constant connection. Harambam's statement over here is pretty high in terms of his understanding of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, we in life, we strive for greatness. We strive for the ideal. Moshe Rabbeinu certainly seems to be presented by the Torah as an ideal. In fact, Meshe Chochma, who's one of those early 20th century rabbi, in his book, Meshe Chochma, his name was Rabbi Meir Simcha HaKohen Mitvinsk, so his statement over here is, look at the words of Harambam. I'm not sure if he cites them explicitly, but he dances around them constantly. And his statement is that our endeavor in life should be to negate Bechira Chofshit, to come to a state in which we lose Bechira Chofshit. His statement about Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe got to the state of being in which no longer had Bechira Chofshit. He was Kemalachim. He lost any of that physical drive or razon or hefetz or whatever. Nevuat Moshe hu lema'ala menuvat kol ha-nevim. He writes, and this is in his Hakdamat Shemot, shenevuat kulam hu al-pi ot u-mofet. By the way, I remember Rabbi Thaler teaching me this in ninth grade. And it didn't make sense to me then, and it took a long time. I'm not certain it still makes sense to me. I'm convinced about its truthfulness, but I have a different perspective of understanding. V'chol ha-ma'amin be'otot yesh b'libo dofi, oshu musmach al pi navim, uchzak le-navi, k'mo Elisha al yedei Eliyahu. He says, whereas Nevi'im in general, we just accept them. They give us signs, and as a result, we accept them. Or they have the stamp of approval from a verified prophet. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not that way. Moshe Rabbeinu, we're told by God, you have to accept him for eternity. Says Meshech Chochmah, says, how could that be? Doesn't Moshe have the capability to make his own decisions? How could God mandate accepting and believing and knowing the veracity of every statement of Moshe? Doesn't Moshe have the capability to lie to us? Couldn't he bring us astray? How come we have a mandate? How have we have a command to follow Moshe? Says Meshech Chochmah, doesn't that possibly imply, here's a statement, Val Korchin, the end of the paragraph, Shashem Itbarach Shalal Mimenu HaBechira LeGamre. He came to the state of being during which he lost Bechira Chofshit. We generally speaking, we read words of Harambam in Hilchot Teshuvah, where he talks about Par'o, and we say that's a terrible thing to lose your... I mean, think about the irony. It's both the worst and the ideal. The ideals that we've had this conversation, if you recall. The ideal state of being seems to be bringing ourselves to losing Bechira Chofshit. The Hata'am, he says, why would Moshe come to that? Say, Shah Tachlit wa Bechira. And so on the one hand, Tachlit, our purpose is to choose appropriately. Shebelo Bechira in Ma'ala la Adam Yotem Mikol Nim Sa'im. If we didn't have Bechira, we wouldn't be greater than everything else. Right. Rak She Moshe She Mitzad Atzmo Amal V'Yaga Kol Kach. His life's perseverance, his halicha, let's use those words. At She He'ena Atzmo L'Madrega Givua She Madrega Ota Ha'enoshi. He couldn't perceive differently. His perspective, his context, whatever words we're going to use, his vision had been completely transformed to the state during which he no longer had that Bechira Chofshit. So the irony in which we close all this circle, it begins with man's greatness and Ramchal and the Kabbalist statement that man is the purpose of creation because he's a Baal Bechira. But what is man's objective in their mind? To bring himself to a state of being during which he loses Bechira. Now the kicker will be, of course, but we'll never get there. Right, that's obviously the statement over here. We'll never get there. That's an ideal which will remain unrecognized and unfulfilled. The statement here is that Moshe got there. The statement for us is we'll never get there, but that's a life's journey. It was the life's journey of this halicha is to walk in the direction of Ela Makom Asher Areka to a certain extent. In other words, it's to walk in this direction of I want to be able to come to that state of, quote, loss of Bechira, because I have spent a life of this Ahdut, or endeavoring upon this Ahdut. I've spent a life in which I've been looking to be Mekasheh ben Olamo, to look to work on my own dialectical being and bring to that Ahdut. But ultimately speaking, that's a messianic, eschatological type of vision. That's an end of days vision. Ahdut is our job in this world. We're looking to bring things together. Full unity will only be recognized at some idealistic state of being, state of time, which again, we will not perceive, we won't actually experience unless we're really talking about Yemot HaMashiach of some sort.